Good day, nerds, and welcome to a Cantina Conversation today between our book reviewer, Megan, and Tasha Keeble. Tasha Keeble is the author of Call Me Freedom, A Black American Woman Breaks from Empire. And this is a story that Megan truly enjoyed and a memoir from a truly impressive person. They're going to get into some of that in this interview here. So without any further ado, here is Megan and Tasha Keeble.
We are here today with Tasha Keeble. Her upcoming book, Call Me Freedom, A Black American Woman Breaks from Empire, comes out September 14th, correct?
Yes.
Yeah? Okay, yeah. Great. Thank you so much, Tasha, for taking the time to meet with us. I've been really glad I had the opportunity to read this book. You know, parts were, enlightening and heartbreaking and inspiring. And, you know, it was really cool to, I just always appreciate reading things that are different from what I know. So I had a great time reading your book. So thank you for taking the time to meet with us today to talk about it.
Oh, thank you. My pleasure. I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Yeah. Okay. So how about to begin, maybe you want to give like a little synopsis of your book to kind of introduce the subject matter to our listeners who might not have heard of, your upcoming release.
Okay. Well, first of all, it's a memoir.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't necessarily start out that way, but it is. And it's reflective as well as current. So what happens is that I, as the narrator myself, I go through the stages of what I call a period of rough coming out, and it's a difficult period, and I describe it in a sense where I'm coming out, but also going back and pulling out those things that I think were relevant to that time and why I needed to actually pause, or where my life paused. And it kind of started with me being unable to sleep. And this was during, at the height of, like, say, Trump's shenanigans in the summer of 2017. And I kind of used that as like it really did happen that I was unable to sleep when Trump was president for like a period of about 6 months. I had like,
oh, wow. Time.
Yeah. And what happened was I began to like explore things within myself that I could maybe point to or recognize as sort of vestiges of or things that I needed to be rid of. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And like I was trying to look and see connections between like this extreme presidency.
Yeah.
Right? And my own belief system.
Right.
And it was something that I never really I knew was there, but I never really wanted to jump into because I knew it was going to be hard. But it was like I kind of felt something told me that if I ever wanted to sleep again, you better get this right. You better do it. You better like confront or deal with the things that are bothering you. And that's what happened. And I go through this journey. It's historical. I tie some of the narratives of my family, my ancestors, those that I discover and those that I knew and know very well, to my own story. And I kind of stitch it together. And it really is about, and the link, I think, is, and the focal point is sort of my parents. So it starts out with a letter to my father, essentially, right?
Right.
But I also have to, I have this conversation with both my parents. And so, yeah.
yeah. And there's like a kind of a lot to unpack there, even though I feel like you've unpacked so much in your book. So like you're a professor, right? Is in San Francisco, right? Correct? Yeah. So...
In the Bay Area, yeah.
Okay. How did, like, your career kind of, prepare you, like, just with the nature of your position, your role at the university, how did it prepare you to, like, just go for it and get this off your chest and go through the process of, like, writing and seeking publication of this?
Yeah. Well, I can say I've been a writer for much longer than I've been a teacher.
Sure, okay.
Yeah. So it's like they kind of, and I have a lot of friends and colleagues who do the same thing. And it's like this balancing act. But I always knew that I would write, and I always did write, right? But it was like, and I started out in college, I edited our school newspaper. No, actually our yearly journal, literary journal. And so I've always been a writer, but I put it very much on hold while I was raising my children. I couldn't find the time or the headspace to even
find
anything like that. Yeah. But I read a lot, and I went as a professor, I have to decide what's pertinent to my students, right?
Sure.
And what they'll connect to. And what I always find is, and what I found recently is that I've been leaning a lot on James Baldwin, especially in these times. And my students have been really, really turned on by a lot of what he has written and left.
Mm-hmm.
And so that from, I guess, undergrad on back when in the 80s, that has always been my guy. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And I was so happy to sort of infuse what I was doing in the classroom with the book. And it actually was that I ended up finding all these different strands that kind of told the same story. And they were in my class, and they're in my writing. So yeah, they're very much synchronous.
Yeah, I don't know. And I could see how that so much of that kind of just fits together. And yeah, when you see kind of like patterns going on, it's like, it's hard to ignore. So you've been writing for a long time. I think I did read, do you write mostly like articles or short stories and things like that? Have you ever had like a major work published before?
I've had a few pieces published here and there. I've won a couple of awards. I've been editing for a very long time.
Okay.
And I write nonfiction. I have a few pieces like in, I guess the most notable now defunct Gawker. And do you know what happened to Gawker? Do you remember Gawker?
No, I think I vaguely see something.
Yeah, but I have a piece. You could probably find it. It's called Writing to Survive. That's a piece. I'm really, really proud of it. But I write nonfiction. I've been blogging for a long time, and I've been working on manuscripts. So, so I have another one in the vault.
Okay. Is it like another memoir, or you're kind of,
no,
you got it out there.
I'm working on it. It's been a busy summer, and I had kind of planned to get that done this summer, but you know, it's coming. I have another fiction work that I'm considering and trying to put together. And it has to do with, labor movement and ties to the riots. The race riot in the earlier part of the 20th century.
So is it easy to kind of like find when you're doing your research for things like that? Is it easy to find references, and is it easy to research, easy to find materials to kind of like collect and produce what you're going for?
It depends on the story, actually. And it depends on the topic. But I'm always interested in those stories that are actually have been obscured and have not come to light. Because that one, I was, I think the germ for that story, the one that I want to finish, it came about from a story that my mom told me. And I never knew that there was a race riot in Elaine, Arkansas, in a church called Hoop Spur. And it was like one of the biggest in the nation. And it was instigated when Black sharecroppers and white sharecroppers kind of tried to form a union. And so the law enforcement, the sheriffs in the town, they had two parties had met. The sharecroppers had met at a church, and they were attacked. And there's confusion about who fired the first shot, but it ended up a lot of people got killed, mostly African American people. And there was a big, gigantic trial around it. And I'm not going to talk any more about it because I want to
hold
it for myself.
Yeah, you don't want to be spoiler-free here.
It's an amazing story. It's an amazing story, yeah.
That's kind of fascinating. Yeah, I'm sure you just, yeah, when you're doing your research and the more you learn about it, you're like, oh, holy crap.
And there's always things that connect and you're like, wow, or you find something that you didn't know. And that was like part of my experience in writing this book. Mm-hmm. Is that as I was writing it, I was discovering things. And those things I would discover, I try to share with my reader, right? And try to connect those. Because it's exciting. And I'm like, I made this connection that I didn't know was here. And yeah, I found another one that came up that's just fascinating to me. And it has to, this is not in the book, but I do talk about one of my ancestors who was a rebel officer. And he was held in, this is on my grandfather's side, he was held as a prisoner of war in Texas. And this is for just a bit. He was released, I think, actually he was released and then he rejoined and he ended up fighting in Texas at the end of the Civil War in the exact same place where Juneteenth was started.
Okay.
He was like the last to stand. Do you know what I mean? The last of that, I guess, that army, that corps, they were the last ones fighting the Civil War in Texas at that time. And it was
over. Right.
Yeah.
That's so cool. That's like, I imagine, I can't relate to that part of, in my ancestry, but it just anybody researching, because I know you said you did one of those DNA tests too, you were kind of touched in, getting in touch and exploring that part. So I imagine like anybody kind of like finding out those cool stories in their lineage. And it's just like, from your perspective and from your, history, I imagine it was just like so inspiring. And then you're like, how can I imagine that probably helped you like flesh a lot of your, maybe kept the ball rolling, maybe kept like, your pen on the paper and kept giving you the words to, the ideas to help them flow. So now this was like your first like longer book then, right? Or because the other works that you've had published are a bit shorter, I'm guessing.
Yes.
So did you change like your process at all then when you sat down to flesh out this book, like with your writing process, if you had any, did you kind of handle it the same way?
No, I didn't. And this is, the process was more of an emotional one, the challenge.
Sure.
And I don't know. And it's sort of like you have to weigh how, because what I felt is that I'm asking others. There's a degree of honesty that I and we need to walk with. It's sort of like the world is demanding a little bit, like a whole lot more honesty within our conversations, right? Mm-hmm. And if this is my position, then it's sort of like, well, how honest can you be? And how, not necessarily naked, but how investigative do you want to be? Interrogate these things truly. Right? Or do you have limits on I have ethical limits.
Right? Yeah.
I wanted to be honest about myself. And that was the challenge. And it was a new challenge because my other works, some of my other long work, my other manuscript is not memoir.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a narrator, right? And the narrator is not me necessarily. And they're telling the story. And it's a lot easier to, it's a friend of mine, a writer friend of mine, once said it's like writers hide in their, right?
Yeah.
So that was the key. That was the, to get honest about what it was that I was feeling.
Yeah.
What I was thinking. Right. So.
Yeah. And you also want to, not just to be true to yourself, but for the, whoever you like, your intended audience and people that you hope would resonate with this story, with your experiences and how you're expressing them. You also want to do right by them too. Cause it's challenging. I would imagine to kind of be vulnerable and to open yourself up like this. And, cause I guess one way that I could look at it is like for white people, if they were to read this, like it might make them uncomfortable, but I think it's supposed to, I think You know, that's kind of the gist that I got. Like, you know, it's time to like really, you know, it's 2021. I feel like it's time to step out of your comfort zone and just to take a look at the very least. And then also for your intended audience, for, you know, communities of color, I think that, you know, it certainly will resonate with them. I'm sure like so many people have experiences very similar to your own, whether maybe not necessarily, you know, coming out or having to confront, you know, we'll also get into like your family, because you mentioned like your mom and dad. And so have you, you know, you're close with your mother, you would say?
We're probably too close. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So were you like, when you had to like kind of have these conversations with them when you were like writing your book, did you go a little bit deeper than you usually would go?
You know what? I'm going to say this out loud. My dad only knows that I've written a book.
Okay.
Right. That's it.
Yeah.
If he wants to read it, he can read it, but I doubt he will, because he's just proud of me. So that's all good.
Oh, that's great. You're like, you'll leave it at that.
Yeah, I'll leave it at that. And, but my mom, I saw her in May, and we spent some ample time together. I went to visit my youngest daughter was with us, and it was such a, when I visit with my mom, it's always so meaningful, you know? So it's heavy.
Yeah.
Cause my mom is not a light person. She just isn't. So we've shared this life together. And I think that with her, I honestly did have to have those conversations, like, Mom, you know, I don't agree with you on this. And I am going to be writing things that you won't like.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you can read it if you want. But you might not want to. I mean, that's just the bottom line. And it's not. And I remember at one point my mom told me, because I went through an MFA program. And I was writing and I didn't have, what did she say? It was just like off the cuff. She was just like, well, you just write whatever you need to write. She said that to me, write whatever you need to write. And I was like, huh? Like that's kind of dope. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're going to let me off the hook. And for me as, and that's the thing is like, for me, it was, and I do believe it's cultural. I believe it's very cultural because African American women are very loyal. Right? We are very loyal. And we do, and I hate to speak, I can talk about myself, right?
Sure.
Is that there's always this sense of loyalty to one's parents, one's mother especially.
Yeah. Right?
To your family. I'm not gonna be the one to break the code. Do you know what I mean? Like that. And it's not necessary. And so there's it as an artist, and mine was particularly rigid, right?
Okay.
And because I'm not kidding, you know, my folks were super middle class, super aspirational, always like excellence, intellect, arts, this kind of thing, right?
Yeah.
Has to be a specific way.
Sure.
And if it wasn't, it would bring shame.
No.
And so it's like, it was super hard to break away from that. Like, what do you do? You're about to disappoint the people who raised you.
Yeah. But yeah, I imagine you had maybe had a little internal struggle there. You knew that what you had to do, and you kind of expected certain backlash a little bit, I guess, from that like significant part of your life and what makes you you. But it's like, right. Well, in order to kind of like get all, you know, to really expose like the whole you, you're going to rock the boat a little bit. Yeah. And so I would say, you know, it seemed like it was worth it in the end, you know, considering your end result, you know?
Yeah. But you know what, honestly, and I can say this is that my title is, the title really is, it's about like that thing that how do I get free from this? This
thing
that's just like, that's coming down on me and that continues to come down on me. And it's not a done deal. And that's the thing, is that it's, I don't want to say a work in progress. It's not.
Sure.
It's, there is no endpoint, you know, it's like,
yeah.
There's a constant coming out and realizing, I guess. And affirming again, because you have to, I have to do it again.
Yeah. Well, that's also, you know, as you go through like different stages of your life, you know, you're, like you said, you're going to have to revisit some things and to see, you know, I'm imagining if you go through different stages and you're growing up, you know, your teens versus your 20s versus your 30s versus your 40s, it's like you go through all these, you know, you're growing as a person. And yeah, like you might have to go back and revisit some parts, you know, like especially if you, you know, going through different life experiences, like becoming a mother is a huge one where it's, I, you know, when people ask me, you know, they're thinking about one of my friends, she's, you know, thinking about having kids. And she was like, because I never wanted children, but you know, it happened and they're pretty awesome, you know? but you know, it's, I explained to her, like you have these parts of you, these roles, you know, like you're a daughter, you're a cousin, you're a sister, you're, you know, all these things. And now you're adding like a new level to that, to yourself. And like, when you're describing, you know, it's a process. It's like, it's not a work in progress because I've, you know, you've grown so much, but like, as you kind of like meet these new levels or these different parts of you, these different components of you that, you know, change throughout your life. Yeah. You'll definitely have to go revisit that. And, you know, and it ties into like, you know, mental health aspect. I think, you know, the pandemic has forced a lot of people to confront their mental health. Right. And, you know, and I think it's, you know, one of those big things that where, you know, I think a lot of people have gotten a little bit closer in touch with not just what makes them tick, but what keeps them going and how to keep their whole self, like, you know, going and to be resilient.
Yeah. Find something to hold on to. That was like, yeah, this time it's that, like, fine for me, it was teaching, right?
Yeah, I bet.
Yeah. And oh, I didn't even, you know what? That was, I actually wrote a course to talk about revealing. I wrote a course, an ethnic studies course during the pandemic, at the start of the pandemic. When it started, I was writing it. I just,
oh, okay. It.
And that really kind of broke open the door just for this work. For this book, right? Because I was able to kind of see all of the, I recognized it, all of the different intersections, right? All of them, like historically within the country. And I had written for 2 years prior, starting in 2015, I wrote an entire website on African literature.
Okay.
Yeah. And that was like one of my, I'm super proud of that. I actually still
have
that work, but it's, so I was able to study all, I had to study all of that, colonial empire building, all of that history, right. And on a more global scale,
right.
And like on a diasporic scale and wow. And so those two things, like the research, the history, and the writing all kind of linked together.
Mm-hmm.
None of them are separate, right? They don't happen in a vacuum. My English students used to say, when I taught high school, they would be like, why are we studying history? I was like, writing takes place in history.
Yeah. That's like so much of it like reflects the times, you know, during which it was written. It's like, and that's the beautiful thing about literature too, is just like, it was challenging the status quo. It was reflecting the historic events. That's why I think a lot of so much history and English coursework like goes hand in hand because of that. And so, you know, kind of bouncing off of that, I want to like go back to like, you're writing coursework and then it kind of jumped out at you. You're like, okay, I got something here. And so what made you decide to write it in like the form of the letters to your father?
Well, here's the deal, is that part of the African tradition, right? You find it in jazz and you find it in African art is a signifying, right? We replicate. Mm. Or we take what somebody else did and then you flip it, right?
Okay.
Yeah. So for me, Baldwin is like my favorite writer. I mean, he and Toni Morrison, like side by side, right? For different reasons. But his letter to his nephew is sort of like a cornerstone of the African-American literature.
Mm-hmm.
And I love what Ta-Nehisi Coates did with it. His echoing sort of that form. And then Kiese Layman did his memoir, Heavy, sort of a letter to his mother.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I said, you know what? I have a whole lot of stuff to talk about. Right? For me, the letter format, it's like the best way for me to explore the emotionality and to connect to that loss. And the one thing is that you said heartbreaking, and everybody says that about this book. And I'm sorry, but it is what it is, you know?
Yeah, no, I think that's what helps people kind of connect to it a little bit more and helps make a stronger impression, at least in my opinion.
Yeah. That if I was going to be honest, I had to actually really talk about my father.
Yeah.
And yeah. I had to talk to my father, the person who had been sort of erased,
mm-hmm.
and whom I had participated in erasing, you know? And so to kind of rehabilitate that story without sentimentality and being honest, because I think my father's story is a common one among mm-hmm. black men. It is too common, you know what I mean? And he's somebody that I wish I had a chance to love. Do you know what I mean? I really do.
Yeah. And that sounds from reading the book, it sounds like you were kind of walking uphill just because he was a veteran and you don't know. That's a whole part of his life where I think even you said that your mom in the book, you said your mom said, the war broke him or something. Yeah. And yeah, it's like, there's just, and of course it's like, how do you talk to him about that to begin with? Like, how do you open that channel of communication when it's probably something that's the last thing he wants to talk about, or he doesn't know how to talk about it. And
yeah,
with you trying to, you know, give him that chance or open that, you know, pathway, it seemed like you were already like hitting a little bit of a brick wall with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And it was my father's story is the one of the readers, and I'm not going to reveal her who she is, but she kind of talked about it with me because I asked her about, like I said, because she said it was heartbreaking. I'm like, yeah, it was heartbreaking. But she also said that there's this light too underneath. There's a little bit, there's humor, but there's also light. And in mm-hmm. the light, she was like, your stepfather rises, right? Your stepfather rises in these pages. And I think that, and it wasn't even purposeful, it's just true. That
right.
That's the person that he is. And I have to give him credit for doing what he has done and he continues to do. But that doesn't, it was a hard thing to like kind of navigate. It's like, I didn't want to dismiss my father because he's my father. Mm-hmm. But I had to be honest about him. And also, you know, he was a young man. He was kind of like, I don't know if I would have went out with him. You know? My mom did, you know, he was handsome and all that cool stuff and bright and kind of groovy.
Yeah.
I'm like, hey, like what?
Yeah.
What did you see in him?
Like,
what? Yeah, right. Like, what was this about? But, you know, whatever.
Yeah. No, that's also like cool, like a part of, you know, getting to know. I think I imagine it's hard for me to even see my parents as in their 20s getting to know each other. And it's kind of because, yeah, my, you know, they met at a bar and my dad had a fake ID. So he wasn't even supposed to be there. Yeah. And, you know, it was just, it's kind of funny to like, see how that, you know, look where they're at now, you know.
Yeah.
It's like, mom, you know, mom, what was it about him? Like, you know, because I remember, I think one of the consistent stories my dad says about that is that, you know, she was dancing with one of his friends and, you know, I guess his friend didn't want to go in my mom's neighborhood. She was living on the, I'm guessing like somewhere like in Chicago, it was like 26 in California. Probably not the same, you know, sketchy area, I think, or it was just like very predominantly like Hispanic population. And because my mom's family is 100% Mexican. And so it was funny to like kind of learn that, where he was like, well, okay, is it okay if I call her? Like, he didn't, that didn't bother him. And I don't know if that makes him, like, if that was romantic or maybe like dumb. I don't know if he was just, you know, or both. But, you know, I guess I'm grateful for it, because otherwise I wouldn't be here. But yeah, it just kind of reminds me of like, you know, you go through and you're kind of like, you know, you kind of, you try to picture it, and then, you know, how that kind of shaped, their each other's personalities, maybe with like their relationship with each other. And then, like, you know, because you're growing up seeing that, and like that's a big part of who you turn out to be,
right?
You know, and so no, I, yeah, that's like part of it too. So that's like kind of cool that, you know, you were just, you kind of discovered that with your stepfather, kind of like he, you know, inadvertently shined through a little bit. Yeah,
he did. He shined, and he, and I give him 100% credit. He's a cool dude, you know.
Yeah.
Like, still today, I go and see him, you know, every, he calls me, texts me, texts me.
Yeah, that's awesome. Oh, yeah.
No, I, can I ask you a question?
Oh, sure.
I hate to ask.
Yeah.
But you said that you think that white people will be uncomfortable reading this.
Yeah. Do you want me to elaborate? Or
yes, please. Yeah. Can you? Yeah. That was the thing I wanted. I didn't like. That was the whole point. Is like, that's okay. That's
yeah, fine. It is. I personally feel like it's okay. You know, but yeah, I think it's just because, you know, it's the tone you take, but it's like, you just like, you're really letting your feelings out. And it's kind of like, I don't know if white guilt is the way to put it, but you know, it kind of forcing me to like, kind of forcing white people. I don't want to say I'm like representing the white population, but you know, as a white person, it's kind of like forcing me to like acknowledge, you know, these specific things, because you describe a lot of things in detail. And I guess I don't know if like, you know, it, you know, 100%, I never, like, I hear things that of across my life, I hear, you know, and I think more now you kind of like hear experiences of, you know, with the Black Lives Matter movement, and like people who are digging a little bit into the history, like really confronting America's history. Like I'm kind of sensitive to racism, just because like, I feel like I'm a human being, first of all. And so, you know, I have my half of my family is Mexican, and, you know, I have, family members who are, you know, half Mexican, half Black. And so I feel fortunate that I've grown up in kind of an environment where it reduces the risk of me growing up ignorant, I guess, to say. And I'm very grateful for that. But I guess, yeah, just reading, you know, the messaging, it was just like, maybe it's the guilt that comes with it, where it's just like, there's so much truth to it. And there's so much of your experience, and there's so much of your vulnerability, where you're just describing your experiences, and you're bringing in kind of examples of these opinions you have. And there are so many statements that were like quotable, were kind of like, made me like, oh, like read it over again, just be like, oh, that's poignant. Like that's, you know, like that's a little profound, you know, a little tidbit that,
nice,
you know, kind
beautiful.
Of, yeah, yeah.
And so good. It's quotable.
Yeah. And so it, you know, I think, yeah, maybe there's just the discomfort kind of feels like not being able to relate to it, and wish that maybe just not knowing what to say, but, or not knowing how to relate to it. Maybe that's right. the where the discomfort comes from, but that's part of the process, as part of, you know, people, you know, white people should, you know, maybe on their own time, but take all the time they need to confront these things. But, you know, it's, in my opinion, it's about time. It is systemic, and, you know, we don't necessarily have to go into that, but it also makes me think, like, you know, we're not taught that our founding fathers owned hundreds of slaves. Like, I don't remember learning that in school, right. You know, and it's things like that where, you know, we're not told like 100% of the reality of it. It's like, you know, of America, like, yeah, this is a great place, but like, you know, we have to be honest about how this country was built for free. And, you know, a lot of horrible things happen and are still happening. And I like to hope that it's, you know, we're getting better, but at the same time, it's, you know, sometimes it seems like we're, you know, one step forward, two steps back, and there's that, like, you know, yeah. But I think obviously with the internet and with social media, it's a good thing and it's a bad thing too, because right. You realize it gives everybody a voice.
And everybody a voice.
Yeah, yeah. So that's a long way to like answer your question. Yeah, I think just the inability to like kind of relate, not necessarily, you know, because I can't agree or disagree. I'm just like, I'm kind of learning, you know, and I'm always up for learning, you know, and I look at it, you know, I have to look at it from like your point of view and see that, well, it took a lot for you to get your story out there and you didn't hold back, you know, and it's just like, this is, you know, this was the end result. And yes, it's absolutely okay if some you make some people uncomfortable, you know?
Right. Yeah. And I get that. And that was the gift that Baldwin gave me. Right.
Yeah.
I think that was, and it was just this flicking off of one shoulder thinking people who have some influence or some opinion about your work. It's mm-hmm. like, how can you write without all of these imposition? And the imposition start like from birth.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's sort of like, and it just kind of made me respect certain artists even
more. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And like all of my friends and family members who are out and, you know, just completely out and doing their thing and unafraid and
unencumbered
by what other people think. It's really hard. It's something hard. It's very hard on the psyche, actually. And it takes some, I guess, bravery. And
yeah.
Refreshed bravery, I think.
Yeah, for sure.
I didn't have it. Yeah.
Cause you were growing up at a time where it was still like not as widely, you know, not a large part of the population was living free, so to speak, for lack of better words, were out freely out like that, you know? And so it's how does that, like, you know, seeing things are how things are today, like, do you, like, how do you explore, you know, does that shift your perspective? Like, especially going through this process of writing this book and getting your thoughts out and just putting your truth out there. How is that, like, that whole process of, you know, breaking away and living for yourself? Like, has that shifted your perspective on other aspects of your life and other relationships?
Well, yeah, most definitely. I live in the Bay Area, in the East Bay, specifically right next to Oakland. I'm in Oakland every day, so I claim Oakland. Right. And so it's a very, you know, open place to be. It wasn't that way for many, many years. And I remember I came out first in, like, officially in 2003, maybe. That was the first time that I told my mom that I was queer. And we had a conversation. And I think I wrote about it. I was like, yeah. And she's like, yeah. But that's private, you know. That's
right.
Like, yeah, I know, but that's your business, right?
Right. Like,
so it's that kind of thing. And what I had to, a friend and I were talking the other day, and we were talking about this notion of like coming out, and a lot of people won't do it and won't go to, because there are different levels, right? I came out to like some of my aunts, I guess. And then you just assume that everybody knows. Right.
Yeah, right.
I don't want to have to, like, officially, I came out to my kids back in like 2001 probably. But it's like you don't want to, and you don't think you should have to carry the burden of continually making this announcement, right?
Yeah.
It's kind of demeaning in a way. I mean, it is, you know, it's like, hey, I'm different from you.
They were
yeah, but a lot of people will, and this is my experience, a lot of people will just disappear, and they'll go into a safe community, will disconnect from like their hometown. You know, a lot of people leave from where they are and have to go to the big city and become kind of anonymous or kind of cloistered in a community that is safer for them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's sort of like your family relationships are damaged, or you just, there's a breach, and or like when you go home, it doesn't feel the same.
Yeah.
People treat you weird, or they don't treat you like they treat the other family members. And so it's a very painful thing. And it doesn't, I don't think it necessarily matters that more people are more visibly out. I mean, it does in a sense, because it's less of a controversy.
Sure.
Right. But it doesn't mean that you're necessarily welcomed wholeheartedly the way you would like to be. So.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. That's a good point. Cause you know, that kind of goes back to me, you know, not being able to relate, and just like, I appreciate getting, you know, to know your experience is different than my own, because I'm here thinking like, oh, you know, I have friends who are, you know, in same sex marriages and relationships, and, you know, very dear to me. I love them so much. And it's like, I think like, oh, I'm glad that they're, you know, able to live out now. But then I imagine like, it still wouldn't have made it any easier on them to come out. It's still, you know, maybe they feel a little more, I don't know if safe is the right word. Maybe they felt a little more supported in a sense, or maybe they had more resources. But yeah, it doesn't necessarily make it an easier process for them. Yeah. So no, that's a good insight, you know, to pass along to someone like me, who's just, you know, I'm always willing to learn, you know, and like I said, I appreciate the opportunity to learn experiences different than my own. And so, cause we are like approaching our hour. I can't believe it. So just a couple more questions before we wrap up. Okay. Well, okay. So you kind of touched on this a little two-part question. What were the most difficult parts to write, and what were your favorite parts to write?
The most difficult part to write, I had written before, and I put it in here because I thought that it fit. And that was a part of the process for me as well, is that it was really hard to write, but I felt like it was so, almost to me, like a priceless experience. And that was the my mother and father. I imagined how their lives together.
Yeah.
And there's a scene there that I'm always very proud of, but it was the hardest thing I have ever had to write. It was like they were in love with each other. They were like making love.
Yeah. Was it like class assignment or something for you, right? Yeah.
And I felt emboldened because everybody else had to do it. So,
yeah.
Okay, well, let's do this. But yeah, but I had to imagine them being in love and actually, you know, their experiences with each other and being naive and green and trying to make a family.
Yeah. Yeah.
Everything else that was coming down on them. Still having that kind of that beautiful experience in this beautiful place. And yeah, that's what I actually wanted, but also being honest about it and the hurt that they both must have felt in having to give up their first child. And that was, that was hard. That was hard.
Yeah. And then like, so what were your favorite parts to write?
My favorite part to write was when I was writing about my church and my friend Katana.
Oh.
Yeah, because she was the one, she's like, I'm going to call you Freedom. That was her.
Okay, yeah.
Yes. And so that chapter, I think, was my favorite part to write, actually, because I actually changed the name of the book because it was called Freedom Like Serena.
Okay.
Yeah. That came out of that scene because it reminded me, like, and I compared the freedom that I was feeling at that moment in time. This is before COVID. So I felt very, and I had worked through this stuff and was able to kind of rejoin the community as I felt like I was different. And that was, it was a very empowering scene to write. And it was, right now I could read it. And it still gives me joy. And I wanted folks to experience not the religiosity of the church, but the fellowship and the spirit of the church and the music, right?
Mm-hmm.
That was the thing that I wanted people to hear and feel. And I think that was the most fun.
Yeah, no, that's really cool. After all of this, after your experiences, and after, you know, reflecting on the moments that you decided to include in your book, what kind of like advice would you give to your younger self? Maybe not when you at the point where you first started writing this book, but maybe, you know, far back, I don't know, maybe when you're like just coming out of college, because it's a Spelman, right?
Yeah.
So maybe like pick that point. What kind of like advice would you give to your younger self?
Myself as a person or as a writer?
How about as a writer?
Oh, I think I would tell myself to note everything. And and keep your eye on the bigger picture, but also look for the connection.
Yeah. I think that's good advice for anybody. You right. know, I'm like, oh, that's good to know. That's good to keep in mind too. Yeah.
Look
okay.
For the connections. Like that's what I would tell my younger self. Really look for the connections. You are writing this story. And I've always, you know, always imagined that I'm writing this story and that, yeah, it look for the connections between that day and this day and that
yeah.
and this event.
Yeah. No, that's really powerful. So Tasha Keeble, thank you so much. This was a very enjoyable conversation. Like I said, I appreciate the opportunity to read this book. You know, it was inspiring and it was entertaining and, I learned a lot and it made me kind of, not necessarily take a deeper look into myself, but pay closer attention and to see if there's anything I'm missing out in the world, really.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I appreciate that. That's wild. I really appreciate it. Anything anybody says, even, you know, like this sucked or I wish you hadn't done this. I really appreciate the time.
No, I know you produced a really great piece of work. It was beautifully written. Like I said, the quotable moments that made me think. Yeah, for sure. So are you on like social media at all? Do you have a website that you want to kind of push out?
Well, I'm on Facebook under Tasha Keeble. And I also I'm on Instagram, Tasha K3I.
Okay.
Yeah. And that's it.
Okay.
That's how I'm reached instantly in those ways. So.
Okay, cool. No, I'll keep an eye out. I'll I'll have to follow you and you know, keep an eye on you to see those those works you have that you're working on right now, to be released in the future too.
All right. Awesome.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you so much. So Call Me Freedom comes out September 14th. So thank you so much. And congratulations and good luck as you continue to push this work out.
All right. Thank you. Thank you so much. You're my
friend. Yeah. Have a good night.
All right. You too. Thanks a lot.
And thank you for listening to this Cantina Conversation with Tasha Keeble. If you're inspired by this interview to pick up a copy, you can do so obviously anywhere you can purchase books, or you can find links to her website, her Instagram, links to purchase, all of that over at thenerdcantina.com. We appreciate you listening, and we hope that you will join us again for another Cantina Conversation in the future or our weekly episodes where we discuss the news surrounding nerd culture. Thanks again, and we'll talk to you next time, nerds.